spending another meeting of whips and chairs of committees, but they are, all of them said they are coming, they are on the way. The members are only two for now. It's myself and the honorable member there. But we can start. They will find us on the way. We said we need to start at 10. We need to start at 10, but members will be joining us. We can't wait for them. Thank you very much. I hope you have an agenda in front of you. The first item is introductions. I'll start. My name is Matibeshtereke Baldwin, the chair of the Select Committee on Public Enterprise and Communication. I'll allow the honor. I'm from Limpopo.
Good morning, Chairperson, and all the officials and the officials of Transnet. My name is Andrew Arnold. I'm a member of the committee and representing the Western Cape.
Thank you very much. We'll hand over to Transnet to do the introductions.
Good morning, honorable members and ladies and gentlemen. My name is Popo Moleva, chairman of Transnet. I am here with the delegation from the board of directors of Transnet and management of Transnet. And DPE, the department to which we report. Quickly, is Advocate Mutaung here already?
Advocate? Yes, he's okay.
Oh. Yeah. He was caught in a traffic jam. So this is Advocate Mutaung, Ms. Dimakatso Masoha, Ms. Mpo Letape,
as long as they indicate so that
Mr. Gert De Beer, Mr. Makosini Shongwe, well, maybe I should say what are their titles. Gert De Beer is Chief Business Development Officer. Shongwe is General Manager Capacity Development Services. And Richard Valio, Acting Chief Operating Officer. Mr. Mark Greg McDonald, Acting Chief Financial Officer. Ms. Phyllis DeFeto, General Manager in the Office of Chairman and the Acting Group CEO. And Mr. Tommy Marcorde, Group Communications. And then I'm going to ask Avril to introduce DPE members here present.
Thank you. So my name is Avril Helsted. I'm the acting DDG responsible for the transport and defence enterprises. Chairperson, I have to table the apologies from the Minister and the Deputy Minister. We have multiple engagements going on at the different portfolio committees and select committees today, so we have had to split ourselves a little bit thinly. I'm accompanied here by Mr. Edwin Baker, who is a senior financial analyst focusing on the transport enterprises.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Pumelele Loli, CBC. I am the committee secretary. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Eric Boskati. I'm the corner advisor for the committee.
Good morning, everyone. Talan Smilane, researcher for the committee.
Good morning. My name is Yuli Soland.
Good morning. My name is Navisha Pinsani, and I'm representative of the Auditor General's Office.
Good morning. Linda Ings for Business Day.
Good morning. Gay Davis, Eyewitness News.
Good morning, Duluthang Meti, Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Thank you very much. I hope everyone in the house has been introduced. The next item is apologies. We have already received the apology of the minister and the deputy minister. Any other apology before we hand over?
We received an apology from Honorable Smith.
we want you to be comfortable first, and then we can continue. It must be carried by the train of Transnet. No, thank you very much. If there are any apologies, Chairperson?
Chair, apologies for the acting group CEO of Transnet and the rest of the directors. We do have a board meeting tomorrow, but besides, we thought that we would just bring an adequate number of directors because it's fairly expensive exercise to bring all the directors to Cape Town. We have attempted to bring the number that would enable us to present what the chair and the committee require of us. But I'm recording that the fact that they are not here is not that they don't consider the meeting important. We needed to act in a manner that allows us to manage the finances of the organization as well as attend to other urgent matters facing Transnet.
Thank you very much. We adoption of the agenda, honorable members. We have got the agenda in front of us that we need to adopt. Honorable Bidi.
Thanks, Chair. I move for the adoption of the agenda.
Okay. Honorable Anno, second.
Chairperson, I just wanted to note on the agenda that we won't be making a presentation at the department. We'll just say a few words. The main presentation will come from Transnet.
Yes, of course. That's how we'll do it. Thank you very much. I'll just allow the honorable members, like I had already apologized on their behalf, that they'll be coming a bit late just to introduce themselves, so that when you respond to their question or comment, you don't say, honorable member. You know their names. Yeah.
Okay, thank you, Chair. My name is Lindwe Bibi. I'm the secretary of this committee. Thanks.
From which province?
From KZN province. Thank you.
We always emphasize from which province because we are select committee. We represent provinces when we are here.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Winnie Gwenya, member of this committee from Gauteng, next door. Naba Antiga.
for public.
Oh.
Thank you very much. We'll allow DPE first, the chairperson, to have remarks and then hand over to you to do the presentation.
So, Chairperson, as I mentioned, I will be very brief because Transnet have put together a very comprehensive presentation, I think not only addressing the issues that you had asked for around the financial stability and the regular expenditure and investigations, but they've also shared with you information around the performance, operational performance of the company. I think in essence, as DPE, we are satisfied that the company is financially stable. It's one of the entities that has got a sound balance sheet and is continuing to generate profits. Obviously, in this financial year, and we'll get into it, there was a very significant amount of irregular expenditure that was reported. A lot of it comes, in fact, by far the in probably in excess of 90% of it comes from the previous years, in particular the locomotive procurement contracts that the company has entered into. But I will leave the Transnet team to go into the details of that. But I think suffice to say that, you know, the minister has placed a lot of emphasis around the fact that this is not irregular expenditure that was incurred by the current board, by and large. There were some contracts that continue to operate under the tenure of the current board, but it is things that they are having to deal with as the current board, legacy contract that they're having to deal with. So I think with that, Chairperson, I think I'll hand over to the Transnet team to take you through the detailed presentation.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
No, thank you, Chair. I would have probably said what Ms. Hosted has said, so I will not make comments. I would like to introduce the acting Group Chief Financial Officer, Mark Craig McDonald, to do the presentation. There will be, of course, members of the team you'll call upon to make interventions necessary.
Good morning, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen. I'm also from KZN. All right, so this presentation, we're going to talk to the financial results for the year ended March 2019, which we released on the 30th of September. And we're going to cover the regular expenditure, capital expenditure, and I think most of the agenda items that we received a briefing on. So just the performance highlights. Transnet, from a financial perspective, has done very well. Our revenue, as in percentage terms, only increased by 1.6%, but in the current economic climate, I think the 74 billion turnover was acceptable, and one of the main areas of volume increase was actually in the new multi-product pipeline that runs from Durban through to Gauteng. We had a 9.1% increase in volumes. Operating expenses have been well controlled for the last two financial years. In this year ended March 2019, it was essentially flat. In fact, there was a marginal decrease of 0.1% to 40.3 billion. That represented a saving of 6.8 billion against our corporate plan budget, which was approved by enterprises. EBITDA increased by 3.8% to 33.8 billion, with a margin, EBITDA margin of 45%. The net profit for the year increased by almost 25% to 6 billion. Gearing as well below our internal ceiling of 50%, it's sitting at 44.5%. All of our loan covenants require it to be below 60%, and cash interest cover was at 2.9
towns. It did grow to 3 towns at the September 2019 half-year results, which we've also released already. Capital investment, $17.9 billion. That brought our capital expenditure over the past 7 years to $183 billion. And 2.5% of our operating costs were spent on personnel training. The qualified audit opinion, I'll touch on it briefly now and then deal with it a bit when we get to the regular expenditure. But just to say that for the last financial year, 2019, and the year before, 2018, both years we received a qualified audit opinion. The audit opinion, or the basis for the audit opinion, was limited to the fact that the auditors couldn't ascertain that we had accurately and completely recorded the amount of irregular expenditure. So it had nothing to do with International Financial Reporting Standards or Companies Act, nothing to do with the financial sustainability of the company. In 2018, our systems of identifying and recording irregular expenditure were inadequate. So we reported $8 billion irregular expenditure in the previous financial year, and that whole $8 billion, there was uncertainty about the accurateness of that. We then embarked on a major internal remedial plan to improve the controls and processes around recording of irregular expenditure and making sure that that's accurately reported. And up until about 4 weeks before we presented our financial results, ourselves, the board, and together with the external auditors were of the opinion that we were going to get an unqualified opinion. But the Auditor General was involved in our audit for the first time in this current financial year, and they identified a new area, a National Treasury Regulation, Supplier Development, where we were using Supplier Development as a pre-qualifying criteria in our tenders. So we were trying to comply with government policy along the lines of the Supplier Development Program, and the way that we did that was insisting as a pre-qualifying criteria that potential bidders must be committed to participate in a supply development program. And that was against the National Treasury regulations. In fact, after the audit opinion was issued, and as we sit here today, there's still debate between the Auditor General, National Treasury and Transnet as to whether that is actually irregular. But in order to not delay the release of our financials any longer, we accepted a qualified opinion. We said we'll deal with that later. So it is specific to accurateness of irregular expenditure, but and specifically to one line item of that, which I'll deal with on a slide later on. The performance against our shareholder compact, 53% performance. It doesn't look, it's not where we want to be. But I think we do need to remember that our shareholder compact contains a lot of stretch targets and areas where the shareholder would like us to perform better in. So we tend to select areas where we're not doing as well as we should, and we put that in the compact. So it is without detracting from whether we made it or not, it's just saying that we're generally striving at stretch targets in the area of the compact. Financial performance, I have covered the highlights. When we compare to prior year, generally the results are very good. The market has been very pleased with our financial results. We've been on a number of investor roadshows locally and internationally, and certainly Transnet raises all its funding off its own balance sheet. We don't take any government guarantees. We don't plan to use government guarantees, and the investor market is comfortable with our financial performance. Strong cash flows. I'll cover some of the cash flow issues a little later. And the volumes have been a little disappointing. Let's just talk to the revenue, the growth. I've covered the 1.6%. So our primary volumes on the rail business is the export iron ore, which is generally around 60 million tonnes a year. that's Concession in the Northern Cape through to Saldanha. Export coal, which is from the various coal fields through to the port of Richards Bay, and then general freight, which is really all of the other rail commodities. And that's an area where we want to and should be doing a lot better than we are. That's effectively the strategy that we've had for some number of years now, called the road to rail strategy, where we're trying to get cargo off the trucks that are on the road and onto the rail. That cargo, which is regarded as rail-friendly cargo. So obviously there's certain cargo that short distance doesn't work for rail, but if it's heavy weight and over a certain distance, it's regarded as rail-friendly, and our market share in that space is not what it should be. So it's an area where we've been struggling to improve, and in fact you can see in 2018 we did 90 million tonnes, and that dropped to 84.7, 85 million tonnes in the last financial year. The port containers and the imports and exports, there was a slight decline from 2018 to 2019. The imports and exports containers are essentially a function of the economy and the growth in the economy, the demand for imports and exports. So we can't really influence that, we can't make that any higher than it is. The space where we can increase volumes in containers is what we call transshipment. That's where the big container vessels come and drop off all of their boxes and containers, and then smaller vessels will pick them up and deliver them up the east coast or west coast of Africa. So that market is very dependent on the efficiency of the terminals. So if we are inefficient, we can lose that volume to ports like Mauritius, Reunion, Halkett's Bay, and so on. So it's quite a competitive market, and that's where we do compete with other ports. The petroleum, the new pipeline is operational, and we did see a 9.1% growth in the petroleum volumes. The net operating expenses, I have covered the fact that they've been controlled and actually reduced slightly year on year. The bulk of our operating costs is personnel. So 57% of our operating costs is the personnel costs. There we have three-year wage agreements in place. The current wage agreement is an annual increase of 7.1%. So with that 7.1% increase on 57% of our costs, we still managed to contain our cost to a zero increase, which means that we saved in other areas, consultants, travel, stationery, phones, whatever. There's an ongoing drive to reduce that, and not only to reduce those costs, but also in the procurement of those various services, we feel we could do better in that space. Procuring the same things for lower costs. EBITDA, I think the block on the right or the circle on the right, really just to give you an indication as to how our business, 55% of our business is TFR, which is the freight rail business. So if freight rail doesn't work, Transnet as a whole struggles to perform financially. So with that drop in the GFB general freight volumes on the rail side, that has a major impact on us. And if they are able to turn, or if we are able to turn that around this coming year, it'll be a big profit. The pipeline business, 11%. TPT stands for Transnet Port Terminals. TNPA is the Port Authority. So the Port Authority, we own the eight commercial ports, own and operate the eight commercial ports on South Africa's coast. TPT is the terminal operator, which operates 16 terminals across those ports. So those are all the container terminals, the car terminals, the iron ore terminal in Saldanha. But we do compete with the private sector there. So you have companies like Midwest, Grindrod, that also operate terminals in the ports. All of the liquid bulk, it's the major oil companies, they operate terminals in the ports. The Richards Bay Coal Terminal is owned by the mining companies, so there is competition in the in the ports operating in the terminal side, but on some of the types of terminals like the car and the container, we are the dominant operator there. And then our the pipeline business, TPL and TNPA, those are both regulated entities, and that accounts for 34% of our EBITDA. Depreciation, fair value adjustments, impairments, I mean, most of these are accounting entries and quite highly affected by our revaluation. Each year we revalue the assets. I think that a thing that we, the bottom one, net finance cost, is a cost area that we really are putting a lot of focus on in trying to control. The 2018 costs went up in 2019 to 11 billion. That was because of the downgrade we had in December 2017, and because of new loans put in place for the 1064 locomotive contracts. But you'll see that against budget, it's a saving of 1.4 billion. So we are doing quite a lot of work to negotiate, improve. All of the new funding is being done at lower cost than the existing weighted average cost of debt. Net profit for the year, this just gives you a waterfall graph from the March 2018 net profit of 4.8 billion. Growing to 6 billion. Essentially, the growth in our EBITDA, which is our revenue less operating cost of 1.2, is the primary reason for the 4.8 growing to 6. The rest are in and outs, fair values, depreciation, impairment, and net finance costs. Tax, we are a tax paying entity. At the moment, we do have tax losses, so from a cash perspective, we're not paying tax, but we are accruing deferred tax and will in due course pay cash, tax in a cash form. Property, plant and equipment, 313 billion. The March 28th figure was 335. We spent 18 billion on new capital expenditure. We revalued our rail infrastructure and assets down by 25 billion. Sounds like a very large number, and it is a large number. It doesn't hit our income statement, but it's an annual adjustment that we do to our rail assets, dependent on where we see the market going, so on discounted cash flows. So it's very dependent on the projections in terms of volumes. Return on total average assets is 5.8%, and we're hoping to continue growing that. Total borrowings. The borrowings 2018 to 20, that shouldn't be 2009, it should be 2019, 122 billion to 127 billion. The bulk of that, because we didn't borrow in 2019, the bulk of that is foreign exchange translations, because we do have US dollar debt. But we 100% forward cover all of that or hedge all of it. So although you'll see that the debt growing by 5 billion, the hedging instrument that we've got also grew by 5 billion, which will offset it. Gearing is acceptable, 44%. Cash interest cover at 2.9 times. In September, it's back to 3 times. Perhaps while we're talking about borrowings, just to share with you some of the things that we have done recently, where the market is showing a lot of confidence in Transnet. In Q1 of 2017, we've always had Transnet listed bonds on the JSE and in London and in Luxembourg. And in Q1 2017, the investor community placed an embargo on trading in Transnet bonds. And that was at the heart of state capture and various governance issues that they were not happy with. As Avril mentioned, we've gone through a major era of cleanup, where in May 2018 an entire new board, the current board was appointed. We've had these remedial plans. We've participated in the Zonda Commission and at various other investigations underway, and the board has acted on all of the recommendations that have come out of those investigations. So whether investigations have indicated that individuals need to be dealt with from a disciplinary action, that has happened to the point that currently we sit with an entire exco almost that is in an acting capacity. The CFO, the CEO, the treasurer, the CRO, the CPO, and so on are all acting. But the board is busy closing out that situation and arriving at permanent positions. With all of that having taken place, and we've also taken the legal action, civil claims against any companies that were fingered in that process or any of the individuals, even those that whose employment has been terminated or resigned. With that all behind us and with the good financial results and the half-year results which we released on the 11th of November, we did go to the market and start making our bonds available for trading again to see whether there's an appetite. On the 16th of October we issued a SENS announcement to say if you want to buy Transnet bonds, phone our own treasury desk and we will give you pricing for it. We issued 900 million within 3 weeks. The demand was closer to 3 billion, but we didn't need all of the funding, so we didn't issue out the full demand. And then that's what you call sell side pricing, when someone phones your treasury desk and asks for a price on a specific amount on a specific bond. We still hadn't done an auction, and we purposely did it that way first to see that there was confidence. And then on Monday this week, on the 25th, we did an auction for 250 million of our bonds, 2030 and 2040. It was oversubscribed by more than three times. So we received bids of 790 million and we issued the 250. And this month we've also signed a loan agreement with Frankfurt, both Bank KfW. It's in Rand. It's the first time they've done a Rand bond. We've had a kind of internal policy decision to say we only want to borrow in Rand, not foreign currency. It's generally much cheaper to do it that way, and all of our revenue and expenses are generally Rand based. And then we're dealing with a number of local banks on other loans. So from a financial sustainability and a funding perspective, we are not in any way near any of the other, some of the other FOCs that you've heard of. In fact, once we've signed up these loan agreements that we have in place, we will not need funding until March 2021. So I know financial sustainability was one of your concerns, so I just thought I'd spend a bit of time on that. The next page, okay, I've just gone and spoken much about the liquidity. The Moody's, you may have noticed the rating action that they took a few weeks back. They changed our rating. They kept it as Baa3, but changed the outlook from stable to negative. And we're busy dealing with S&P at the moment, who may also seem to have a negative approach. But the one thing one must understand with these rating agencies is that they have their own methods of assessing a company, and they really want you to borrow all of your money in advance. So we have debt repayments in the coming year, in the next 12 months, of like 15 billion, and they would want us ideally to have borrowed that whole 15 billion now. So if I borrow that 15 billion now, I'm going to pay 1.5 billion interest over the next 12 months. When I don't need it now, I only need a little bit next month, a little bit the following month, and so on. So it's a balancing act where, on the one hand, we want to pay less finance costs and manage the business commercially, or you want to satisfy a rating agency. So trying to do both is something that's a bit difficult. And the implications of the rating agencies when they take the rating action, there are negative implications because it costs us a little bit extra on existing loans. They've all got clauses built in where there's a notch increase in your rate, but it'll cost you nowhere near what it would cost you if you had to borrow all of that money up front. This is just the reality that we need to manage. Capital investment. Our capital investment over the last 5 years, you'll see it dropping. And the reason, the number of reasons for that, the 33 billion, all the areas where it was 30 billion a year, that was a lot of those were related to the 1064 locomotive contract, the payments, the upfront payments in that made over that period. We've had some procurement issues that have slowed down certain projects. We've also had spent a lot of time on optimizing our capital expenditure program, so trying to get more value for our buck, if I can say it that way. Spending it, you know, if I take engineering example, like a container crane, if you leave it to our port engineers to specify what they want, it'll have every bell and whistle on the thing. As opposed to if you had to say, can I buy an off-the-shelf container crane that everyone else uses around the world? And the price differences are obviously good savings in that space. One of the big areas we've also had a reduction in our forecast capital expenditure is on the manganese exports. South Africa has about 80% of the world's manganese reserves, and the demand has been growing. The demand was up to 16 million tons per annum. We used to export only through Port Elizabeth, where we've got a bulk terminal of 5.5 million tons. And over the years, that has grown, where we've done some exports through Durban, a little bit through Saldanha. And we had a plan to do a significant expansion, heavy haul line and terminal in Kuka. But that was going to cost 20-something billion rand. And the demand, and we actually went ahead with it. We started the initial parts of that program. But the demand for manganese kind of overtook us, and we essentially had to find other ways to export manganese. And so we started exporting through Saldanha, through a little bit through Cape Town, Port Elizabeth, Durban, even Richards Bay, and we've managed to satisfy the entire demand. So we exported 14 or 15 million tons last year. So working with the industry, we've changed the approach to say, let's rather have a multi-channel approach instead of putting it all down one corridor, which is very expensive and risky in case something happens on that corridor. And the industry would have had to pay for that capital expenditure in the form of a higher tariff. So the industry, together with ourselves, we've agreed to rather spend a bit of money on each of the multi-channels, and that's the way we'll do the manganese exports. The bulk of our 78% of our capital expenditure goes into rail. So just so you know, in case some of you might not know exactly how we structured, we've got the 8 commercial ports. We've got 16 terminal operations within those ports. We have the pipeline, which is about 700 kilometers of pipeline, I think it is. And then we've got the rail network. So that's the 28,000 kilometers of rail across South Africa, all of the rolling stock and wagons and so on. So the bulk of our capital expenditure goes into that rail network. That stuff just needs to keep on getting replaced. So every year we need to replace a certain percentage of the actual rails, the sleepers, the locomotives, the wagons, and so on. The capital investment per province, so this slide, if you looked at it in isolation, it would raise a lot of questions. But I think we need to realize that the network, so the entire rail network and rolling stock, that is a kind of shared expense that moves around the country. We move the locomotives and the wagons to wherever they are needed. There are areas where a wagon or a locomotive is specific to that product, but generally we can move them. And then a lot of our investments land up in the port environment along the coast. So if you take an investment in the Western Province, for example, in Saldanha Bay, if we spend money there, although we're spending it in the Western Cape, if we don't spend it in Saldanha Bay, it won't allow the mines in the Northern Cape to expand and spend money. So Kumba, Assmang, and the other new iron ore miners and manganese miners are investing in the provinces, other provinces like the Northern Cape, for example, but they wouldn't be able to do that investment if we hadn't done the investment in Saldanha. And the same would apply in Richards Bay and Durban for provinces like the Northwest and so on. Major capital deliveries, the 1064 locomotive contracts, which you must have read about by now. We've received 525 of them at the end of March. We've probably received, Richard, another 40 or so, I think, 50.
561
we're up to. Those contracts are problematic, but we do generally need the locomotives. So those locomotives that we've got are in the 560 we've received are operational and much more efficient than our old locomotive fleet. And as our older ones get older and roll out, we have to replace them with new locomotives. So that contract at the time that it was entered into was probably ambitious to say that we needed 1,064 at that point in time. But with the slow delivery, we do need them coming in at the rate they're coming in, even quicker if we could get them in quicker. I'll touch on the contracts. Well, essentially there's four contracts. Let's just say they evenly split. General Electric has delivered all of their locomotives, so their contract is finished. China North Rail and China South Rail, I always get confused which one it is, but one of them, they were all four of them had to deliver a manufacture in South Africa. So China North Rail, I think it is, did 20,
yeah,
which they were fully imported, and they haven't manufactured one in South Africa. China South Rail delivered about 200, I think it is, and Bombardier, the Canadian company, is delivering manufacturing in our Durban facilities. Transit Engineers Durban facilities, but at a very slow rate. We're getting 2 to 4 locomotives a month. Yeah, they've delivered about 50 of those. So the problem with those contracts, because I'm going to come on to irregular expenditure just now, so I might as well deal with it. The reason they were irregular is because the tender stipulated a local content requirement. I don't know the details, but it was a high percentage, and that meant that in order to achieve that percentage, you had to manufacture them in South Africa. That's the only way they would have been able to meet that local content. The tender evaluation committee at the time of evaluating the tenders, they bent the rules in terms of that local content requirement. And I don't know all of the detail, but possibly they were finding it was impossible for all of them to comply, but whatever the rules are, they didn't follow the procurement process exactly, so they made concessions and what have you. So that is the reason that from aside from all the corruption things that are in the newspapers, the contracts would be declared irregular from our point of view. That doesn't mean that's fruitless and wasteful or illegal or anything like that, just irregular, so we would have to report that expenditure as irregular. We didn't report it as a regular in the prior financial year because we hadn't finished the investigation, and our auditors agreed it was not, they were uncomfortable that we reported it as a regular. But in this financial year, 2019, we have already identified the fact that we needed to declare the entire four contracts as irregular. The irregular expenditure, when you see it reported, it's not irregular expenditure for a particular period. It's a live register. So when you identify a regular expenditure, even if it's from 4 years ago or 5 years ago, you put it on the register in the year that you find it. So we put 41 billion of irregular expenditure onto the register in the 2019 financial year because it was during that year that we were received certainty that, that those LOCA contracts had to be declared irregular. The fact that in addition to that there may be bribes or whatever which the SIU and the Hawks are investigating is a different issue. If that was ever proved and we got that information, then that amount of a bribe, for example, that would be criminal losses or fruitless investment. And we'd obviously deal with that difference. We'll deal with that when it arises. So we'll come back to regular expenditure. This is, I think, the last slide. So this is just gives you a nice overview of the key volumes. I think we've touched on most of them already. Iron ore, 58 million tonnes. General freight at 84. Export coal, 72. The containers, 4.5 million containers per year. And the automotive industry is quite an exciting opportunity for us. 740,000 units, but they are major claims by both Ford and Toyota, so they've been successful in winning global manufacturing contracts, and then the pipeline is now fully operational in general. Operational efficiencies, the cycle time is the time that you run a train from the start through to the offloading. Not where we want to be, wagon turnaround time. These efficiency measures are things that the better you do that, the less efforts you need to move the same amount of volume. So it's very important that we get the efficiencies to the level that they should be. Ship turnaround time is a very key measure for the ships, the shipping industry. When they bring a container vessel into the port, they measure how long it takes them from getting tied up against the berth, getting loaded or unloaded, and then leaving. And the way that we can make that quicker is we can put three cranes, for example, unloading or loading a ship. If we've only got one crane, we're going to do 30 moves an hour, and it's going to take us many hours because there's maybe 4,000 containers on that ship. But if we put three cranes at a time, we can unload it much quicker. So their whole measure is how much time they spend in the port. And the less time they spend in the port, the better for them. Safety and human resources, DIFR ratio has been consistently around 0.7, which is much lower than the global benchmark of 1. So we've been fairly successful in containing that rate. Unfortunately, we had 4 fatalities in the year that we're reporting on, 2019. Our representative workforce, our targets, again, we're not where the left-hand column is the target and the right-hand column is our, it's not shown on the screen, but I think you've all got the hard copies. So we're not achieving exactly where we want to achieve, but there's a lot of effort going into that. Training, I think we've continued to be successful in that area and supporting, not training, in fact, more engineering and technicians than we actually need for our own company. Community development, you may know the Pelopepa train, which moves around the country. There's actually 2 trains. That moves around the country and offers medical health care services, particularly in the rural areas, close to 100,000 patients assisted on board the train, and another 300,000 assisted through outreach programs. Teenage health, exceeded our target of 10,000 teenagers by 46%. So there's ongoing efforts in a number of areas in the CSR space. I won't go into the BE spend. I think we generally have met most of our targets in that area. Energy consumption, a lot of the new locomotives that we've purchased, they regenerate their own power or own energy, but it does get wasted. if there's not another train in the, so when the trains are going uphill, we're using power. When the trains are going downhill, they regenerate power. And if there's another train in the circuit coming the other way, we can reuse it. But otherwise it gets lost and goes back into the network for ESCOM. So there's a lot of efforts in the energy space where we're looking at solar energy, fuel efficient engines, and all of that is getting measured. We're ready for the carbon taxes and carbon emissions, improvements made in a number of spaces there. This is just, I think this is the last slide, but this is the irregular expenditure, which maybe puts it into perspective, or better perspective than just looking at the total number. So March 2018 was 8.1 billion. March 2019 is 49.9 billion. So again, that means that during the March 2019 year, we identified 49 billion and placed it on the register. It's got no bearing to what was spent in that year. The first number, 1618, was actual spend in 2019 in respect of contracts entered into in 2019. So 1.6 billion compared to the prior year of 3.4. So it actually should be seen as an improvement in the incidence of new incidences of irregular expenditure. Often when these big numbers come out, the media will read it as irregular expenditure, someone stealing 49 billion, all gone. It actually should be read the other way, that the new board and management structures have actually identified all of this, 90% of which relates to old contracts, past contracts. The current year spend, the 4.8 is current year spend in respect of old contracts. So there's nothing we can do about it. So if we have a contract that's declared irregular, but it continues, then we'll continue incurring irregular expenditure for as long as that contract continues. It's not something we can cancel because it's a procurement issue that happened within Transnet that caused it. It's not necessarily anything the supplier did. The 1.9 billion is this pre-qualification criteria. So that 1.9 billion, the accuracy and correctness of that 1.9 is the sole reason that we have an audit qualification. So we are busy with the Auditor General and National Treasury to find out whether that pre-qualification criteria is in fact irregular. If it is, we've already put it on the register. We just need to make sure we get the figure 100% accurate. And then the qualification issue is sorted. If it's not irregular, it gets removed from the register. And the 41 billion at the bottom was the locomotive contract, which I've explained. In conclusion, I think from a financial sustainability issue, we still continue to issue good results, generate strong cash flows. The results I've shared with you are the March 2019 full year financial results. On the 11th of November, we issued our half-year results for the current year that we're in, and those results showed further improvement on the 2019 results. So, Chair, I think if I can close it there, and I've got colleagues that can talk to operations, procurement, capital expenditure, if there's any more detail that you would like.
Thank you very much. I think we received a detailed report. Those who are just adding, you can just add quickly so that I give more time to honorable members to interact with the report. But if there are any additions, Chairperson, we can do. You must not speak only on the negatives, even the positives.
No, I think Mark has represented us very well. Just to say, Mark, am I correct to say that the usage of supplier development as pre-qualification criteria was also considered by the Auditor General as being in conflict with Section 217 of the Constitution. Yeah, which says must be competitive, must be transparent, must be fair. And says if you say include supplier development, it means implicitly you are excluding those who don't want to do supply development. It's a contradiction in terms, because we want to transform the economy, we want to be inclusive, we want to promote local participation. Those are issues that National Treasury and ourselves and the DTI will have to deal with going forward. On procurement issues, in particular the issue of the locomotives, irregular contracts, unfortunately this matter is being investigated by a whole range of other law enforcement agencies. We have proceeded on the basis that we are running a business, and although in the end some of those contracts may have to be cancelled, it has to be done amicably through an arrangement agreed with the affected parties, identifying together what we say went wrong with the contract and agreeing on what measures we put in place as remedies, what Advocate Mutawung would probably call the just and equitable remedy, because the judge will say so. There may well be some of them, Mark says, there's a particular supplier who has not produced a single locomotive in South Africa. Quite clearly, we cannot allow the violation of the laws and policies of the country by a supplier. So today, as we are talking to you, the acting group chief executive is meeting with some of them, and he will report to the board of directors tomorrow. There may well be some drastic action, maybe against one or two. They are complex issues because they are bilateral political and diplomatic relationships that have to be taken into account by the government as we deal with these questions, whilst at the same time we appreciate the importance of the Constitution of the Republic as the supreme law. That is all I want to add.
Thank you very much, and thanks for that elaborative presentation. I'll allow members to interact with the report and start here until Honorable Ngwenya. Honorable Bute, you did not introduce yourself. When you speak, you must introduce yourself. But your apology was noted.
Now, thank you very much, Chair, and thanks from Transnet with your presentation, which is an eye-opener for some of the investors. Thank you for your presentation. I've got some questions here. The first one will be, how much have you spent on the triple BEE companies in the 2018 and 19 financial year in terms of percentage? And then the second question will be, what intervention measures you have undertaken to reduce freight from road to rail, considering the damage caused by the trucks on the road? And the third one will be, can you provide an update on the Transnet pensioners case and also Transnet plans around it? And also, I would like to know, how do you recover monies to those who have squandered from Transnet? Do you have a plan to recover those monies back? Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Claude.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry for being late. I'm Juan Sluta, and I represent the Free State in this committee. My question also goes to regarding the Transnet Pension Fund case, the court case. And I want to go into the details of the class action and what happened in the courts with that. I just want to know, when are we going to see, because that's a question we get from our people, when are we going to see a final resolve in this matter? It is Christmas time now, many people are actually dependent on that increase they receive. I mean, these are pensioners who work for 20, 30, even 40 years in Transnet. So when are we going to see this issue being resolved? And then also on that note, now recently there was the issue between Capitec and regiments and even Coral Lagoon Investment. I just want to know what were the roles of Capitec and regiments and Coral in the pension fund case. Thank you.
Honourable Anna.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first say thank you for Transnet for providing us with a presentation in terms of the stability of financial stability and performance of Transnet. While I'm saying that now is we want our SOPs to be effective and sufficient. That is what we want. My concern that I want to raise before I'm going to ask the question is SOEs, and the same now to you, you can't come and tell us that you are financially stable and then in the next year, 2021, as mentioned now by the presenter, you want to come and say we need funds. I think that is not welcomed. Because we want the SOEs, all of them, to be financially stable long term. My question that I want to ask questions is the 1064 project, you can call it like that now. We have received now information that they have only received 561 of those locomotives. And this is actually direct an impact on the company's performance. And we want to know now when are they going to get this issue, like forever now, getting this issue out of Transnet or out of the table so that we can move forward in terms of the mandate. The other thing that I want to raise now, the irregular expenditure presentation on page 27. The current and prior year spent identified in the current year in respect of contracts entered into in prior years. If you look now, I want to check now, just to get clarity in terms of why there is an increase in March 2019. From 4696 to 4846, 2019 March. Yeah. Then the other issue is you cannot, in terms of the governance structure of your company, and we don't want to go back and say previous years. You are here now as the new board or the new structure, and you must give us now confirmation in terms of when, because that is also impacting, it's going to impact the governance issues. Structure is going to impact on the stability of the company. So we also need you to give us now in terms of by when will all these positions, exposed positions, be filled, so that they can also be
responsibility. Then, your cases now, your 76 cases, disciplinary cases, that has been finalized against employees for non-compliance with your PFMA. I think we need more information also on that, because is that the only cases? They still get cases pending, and what is the current status of those cases? Then your compliance issues now. All of us, we know the state of Transnet in terms of corruption in your company and all those issues. Some of the other companies has also come here and they say they have now put in mechanisms in place now, the controls, they have upped their controls, internal controls and everything like that. And we don't want the situation next year, the year after that, or over two, three years, you come here and say your compliance, internal controls that you have strengthened is still the same. There's no real change in terms of that. Chairperson, I think let me... the other one that I want to... I think the legal claims also against those companies that has fraudulently taken money. Maybe we can also have an update in terms of the legal claims against those companies in terms of what has been recouped from those companies. Yeah, that's for now.
Thank you very much, Anut, and welcome Honorable Ngwenya.
Thank you, Chairperson. Also, thank you for the presentation. Chair, I wanted to check with the presenter in terms of the allegation of fraud and corruption. Maybe if they can tell us how far is that. But it, because it looks like there is challenges. And also I wanted to check in terms of the staff, that all the staff that are investigated, how far is that? And the pension fund also, if may we can get a clear sense in terms of the pension fund. How did they solve that problem? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Just my last one, Chairperson and Acting CFO. The irregular expenditure, when it is like that, it will always raise alerts. But I want to check, how are you trying to regularize that irregular expenditure which is there? Because the only way you can move it out of your books is when you have regularized it. And in terms of the new laws of the Auditor General, it can be turned into material irregularity if nothing is done about it. And it has got impact on management and directors. The other issue that I want to check is the issue of the capital investment dropping. Do we have plans to try and pick it up, or is dropping and we're just looking at it going down? The last two issues that I also picked up is the is the issue on your human resource. Well, in terms of transformation, more especially females at EXCO, extended EXCO, people with disability, I see
in almost all those targets that you have set for yourself, you have not met them. What are we doing, Chairperson, the board, and the executive, to try and redress that those issues? And also, just in terms of, BEE, what are our plans to try and pick up the small companies? What are we doing? It was not very elaborate in terms of that. How are we supporting small companies to pick up? Yeah, those are my few questions.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think we should start with the last question, and I'm going to ask Gert to deal with what Transnet is doing with regard to the company. I would take no offense if you refer to what we intend to do on Friday.
Chair, thank you. I think first reference is, I think, to the first member's question as well. Our BE spend is 93%, I think it's on that slide, it's on the 93% of our total measurable procurement spend. And on the right-hand side, it shows the allocation to black-owned, black-woman-owned, small and emerging enterprises. I think we first acknowledge that we need to do a lot more, and we need to do a lot more at a local level. What the Chair is referring to is we started a number of interventions. The first one is to collaborate with the Youth Employment Service, a journey that's driven out of the Presidency. We are partnering with them on what they call the hubs around the country, because we believe that's a focus at youth and quite a practical way to develop entrepreneurial growth for small enterprises, not just our own procurement, but also for the economy as a whole. But under the leadership of the board, what we're embarking on Friday is to listen. Because our impact on small enterprises, and not just on the procurement side, is also on the customer side. We are extremely, and we are told by the market, that we're extremely difficult to engage with for junior, emerging, minors, customers, etc. So on Friday, we have an extensive engagement with, at this stage, we believe in the excess of 1,000 people starting in Johannesburg, to listen to small and emerging suppliers and small and emerging customers in terms of why they find it difficult to engage with transit as a whole to get traction. So although the numbers look fine, we believe we should and will do a lot more impact through our capital investment program, our procurement spend, and then how we serve customers. I think a last point, Chair, that we shouldn't forget is the economic impact that transit has on the local communities through our employment. So I think that's a number we're not making visible, where our 50,000 people are, the salaries they earn, because a big part of our expense is salaries. And those salaries go to our people who are living in the communities across all the provinces, and that wasn't visible in our presentation. But we understand the importance of creating jobs, keeping jobs. I think it's probably a reference to the questions that's around, even as our people in retirement, we understand how important part of the economy that is.
Thank you, Chair. Decline in capital investments, what are we going to do? Mark, as I understand it, we are planning to spend 153.5 billion rand in the next 5 years capital program. You can deal with that, I'm sure, with your team.
Yeah, I think it's almost a question on the financial sustainability and the borrowing and what have you. Obviously, the more capital we spend, it is going to put pressure on borrowings, because we generally have to spend the investment up front and earn the returns over time. So we have indicated on the financial sustainability that we're still going to be borrowing, is we've got repayments, debt redemptions, debt repayments due from the past. And the incidence of that is quite compressed over the next couple of years. It's not evenly spread over 20 years. So all of the new debt that we're going into, we are arranging the prepayment or repayment profile to be spread over more manageable things, so it doesn't cause spikes in any particular year. The fact that our capital expenditure in the last 1 or 2 years has been lower, that's actually helped us, our funding profile, we to borrow. But our intention is certainly not to not spend capital. But we can't just blindly spend capital in the wrong places. So we're trying to make sure that there are proper business cases and proper reasons to spend capital. In fact, this year, I said to the business, I chair the Capital Investment Committee, I said to the business in the first quarter, I can see we're not going to spend our capital program, our full capital budget. So if there's any new projects that are planned for later, let's try and accelerate them, and specifically if they're projects that will generate jobs and generate growth. And National Treasury has supported us in that. You know, if there's any approvals that we need for unbudgeted capital or so on, if it's going to generate growth or jobs, it's obviously going to be well supported. While this slide's up, I'll just deal with the irregular expenditure 4696 going to 4846. That is contracts that are in place. So a typical example is the locomotive contracts. The contracts are declared irregular. We declared 41 billion. That's what we had spent up to the end of March 2019. But today we're still receiving locos. And every loco that we receive, we have to declare that full expenditure as irregular, because it's expenditure in relation to our contract that's still alive, that has previously been declared irregular. So that's why I wanted us to focus on the very first line item, which is...
No, Mark, let's do this. Mark, it has to be declared irregular, because to the extent that that contract has not been cancelled, we are obliged to spend on it. Because the contract is irregular, then it is irregular expenditure. But the contract, as Mark said, is not necessarily unlawful. It will become unlawful the day the court pronounces on it. And that is going to be the function of what I said, is the rational and responsible engagement between management of Transnet and the OEMs, the those who manufacture the locomotives. Because if you deal with it recklessly, you can paralyze Transnet. You will not have locomotives. So you got to engage them, say, okay, you deliver the locomotives. Even GE, they've delivered the locomotives. But the contracts were irregular. There are things we must still take to the court together with them. Because only once the court has dealt with that and we agree on how then through the courts we would regularize what was irregular through the remedial action of justice and equity would deal with that. And so it's a catch-22 situation. You can't just stop it. Unfortunately, is what happened. We have to manage it. But we will, of course, keep the South African public informed as we deal with the resolution to this problem. We think that in the first quarter of next year, advocate, we should be able to provide an answer finally to this question of the locomotives, and hopefully the Auditor General and the external auditors, in dealing with the next financial year, would reduce that amount, which stands at 41, and obviously by December will be more than what it is. Yeah. So I thought I should just add that remark to what you said.
This was a question. Hopefully, you do have hard copies because this slide is going off the edge. So that was the representative, the progress made in terms of getting to the targets we want to achieve in terms of black, 89% black employees, females at Exco, 50%, we're on 38.1. This was at March 2019. So things have changed since March 2019. And as I said earlier, our entire Exco, or the most of it, is still in an acting position. So the recruitment process for formalizing the various appointments is obviously taking into consideration the desired demographics that we are trying to achieve. In terms of the pension fund settlement, the pension fund class action, the pension fund and the legal team representing the pension, they have reached settlement. And that agreement has to go before the court, which will only happen next year. But because we've already reached agreement, the contents of that agreement, we are proceeding with paying out the payments that have been agreed. And that includes a lump sum payment to all pensioners, which is happening in the coming month, in December. I think there's three lump sum payments in over 3 years, the first of which is happening in December, and then the normal increases are light. I mean, I think the payment, the normal pension payment, is being brought forward to the 20th of December. I'm not sure of the date of the lump sum, but it's happening in the December month. Capitec and regiments were appointed as the service provider to the pension fund, so we're supposed to be advising the pension fund on various investments and so on. And they entered the pension fund, or procured that the pension fund enter into certain transactions which were not in the best interest of everyone, or certainly not in the pension fund. And the pension fund has sued them, and they've reached a settlement. The Capitec relation is that's how the settlement was paid. That the pension fund got access to Capitec shares, which it was able to sell to recover the funds. The timing of Exco positions, I'll leave that to the chair to cover.
Mark, let me ask Mayor Letlape to deal with the filling of the Exco positions, where we are for the process.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I'll endeavor to do so. We have finalized the two top positions, and we're going to be submitting those to the Minister for approval, and then an announcement will be made as soon as the Minister has made the appointment, basically, because those are the two positions that are board members as well, executive board members. So that has been done. On the next layer of positions, we're commencing with the interviews on Monday next week. I think we're interviewing for between four and six positions next week. The board has split, so that we can, when I say split, like we've like four members. Four board members have been allocated one or two of the positions to interview for, and to do that. And those, because they don't have to go to Parliament, as soon as we've concluded with those, then we feel we've found the candidates that we are in a position to appoint, we will do so. But the shortlisting, the advertisement for all of them, bar the Chief Executive of Transnet Engineering, the Chief Executive of Transnet Properties, and the chief executive of Transnet Freight Rail, but all of those that are at the exco at the group level, we've finalized the shortlists, we've decided who we're going to be interviewing, and we're commencing with the interviews next week. And as soon as we've concluded with the interviews and we're happy that we have found the right people, we will make the announcements for those. So, and then we will then go on to the next layer, which would be the chief executives of the operating divisions, and those we anticipate that we will conclude, though we've advertised for the Transnet Freight Rail position, for the Transnet Properties and the Transnet Engineering, we have not advertised that. So just to summarize, the ones that we're going to be interviewing for next week is the chief information officer, the chief procurement officer, the chief audit executive, and the treasurer. We're going to be concluding those. The others, like the chief HR officer and a few more, we're not in a position to advertise just yet because the disciplinary proceedings are still ongoing, so we have to wait for those to conclude. Either if they are found not guilty, we reinstate them and business continues. If they are found guilty, if the sanction is to dismiss, we go through the dismissal process and we begin with the advertising. It has taken time. It has not been the easiest to do, and for a variety of reasons. We were just challenged all the way. And we didn't want to just go for what appoint people and then find that we have to unappoint them at a later stage when it came to that. But we well poised that by the end of this financial year, probably 75% of those positions will be filled and we will be left only with those that are fit. On the issue of transformation, Chair, I'm taking liberties here. On the issues of transformation, we're very conscious of that, and we're making sure that as we make those appointments, we're balancing that. When we go into our numbers and we go into the general management layer, you will find that Transnet is doing very well when it comes to the appointment of women. But in these appointments that we're making now, we're endeavoring to make sure that we do that. We are not doing well with the issue of people with disabilities, and it is something that we're very conscious of, and we just need to make sure that we put the right plans in place for us to be able to do that. We fortunately have quite a few, and Mark, you're going to have to help me here, positions in finance that we can sort of say that this is an area where we're going to make sure that we target and we apportion a certain percentage of them, because those are easier. I mean, they're very complex and highly qualified positions that we're looking for, but we believe that, or I believe that having worked in HR for many years, in the last few years, that the possibility of finding people with disabilities in those areas is easier than in other positions, and we will strive to achieve that. Chair, I don't know if there's anything else that you would like me to cover. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Letsape. Honorable Chair, I think we should ask Mark to deal with the issue of internal controls. Honorable members said that, look, we've had people coming here saying they put in place internal controls. We don't want to hear you coming back here and say you are still putting in place internal controls, because what you said you had put in place are not working. There may well be a dialectic between that and what we say is irregular expenditure, which is perpetuated by irregular contracts that we are still paying on. Yeah. Deal with it.
I think Transnet comes from a history of having a very strong internal control environment. If we go back sort of 5-6 years, we had an extremely strong internal control environment. I don't remember an audit qualification ever
in the time that I've been there since 2001, other than the last 2 years. The corruption and issues that happened and some of the irregular expenditure incidents that we've had, a lot of it was collusion, and collusion at a very senior level, even at a board level. So it was a board level and some senior executives. I think we can comfortably say that no one that has, where there's been any charge or any suggestion that they've been involved in any irregular incident or corrupt activity, is still an employee of Transnet. All the ones that, from the investigations, anything that has been brought to the board's attention, those people have been dealt with and have dismissed or resigned, or are currently still on suspension and getting dealt with through the process. So that's the first part in terms of cleaning up. We have appointed a general manager, financial governance, which is a new position at Corporate Center, reporting to myself at the moment. And that person has just been appointed and is getting a structure which is going to enhance the governance around the financial controls. We do have all of the other structures in place and the policies, they are all there. So it's a matter of enforcing the existing policies to make sure internal control is improved. I know we may have said that, or people would come and say that they're generally improving, but I think the proof is in the pudding, and you know, we have moved from a space where the banks did not want to deal with Transnet as recently as 2 years ago, and are now funding, we're getting oversubscribed. So we've managed to satisfy the investor community, the banking community, we've obviously shared the same kind of information that we've shared with you, and we've managed to satisfy them that we've taken significant steps towards improving internal control. Sure, there's room for more improvement, and it's a huge focus area. The Auditor General being involved in our audit, we're working very close with the Auditor General and National Treasury and external audits to make sure that we don't have any of these type of surprises that came up. This pre-qualification criteria was a surprise that none of us knew about, and it came up at the end of the audit. So, you know, all I can say is that we've put the people in place, we've put the structures in place, the controls and the policies are there. It's a matter of the right people driving them through now.
Let me check if Advocate Mutahung would like to say something on this point that Mark is making. If he hasn't, if you don't, I have something to say.
Chair, I can start and you will add where I left. I think essentially, Chair, there's two questions that relates to the same issue. One is, how do we recover money that was stolen from Transnet, and also the issue of fraud, corruption, how we deal with that. And then, Chair, to deal with that, is Transnet is dealing with both issues from the civil action point of view and criminal proceedings point of view. From the civil point of view, is that deals with the question how we recover. We have issued already summonses against those entities together with the executives that were involved at that period. As we speak, as you know, we can't just go and take anything. It's a process. Parties are exchanging pleadings. It will go out in an open court, and issues will be dealt with. Everybody, I think, except one, everybody is defending. Only one is not defending. That includes regiments and all our entities. Then the criminal side, Transnet has basically seconded its own team to NPA to assist with evidence, because we've been involved from the day we appointed, and that's how we're able to present this evidence to some of the people. So we had a backup team that has been doing investigation on our behalf. All I can say in so far as that is concerned is, we're very in advance, if I'm not mistaken. The first test case from the prosecution on the state capture will emanate from Transnet side.
So that's where the processes are at this point. We monitor the process from time to time. The board has taken that upon itself to make sure that they know and understand what is happening. There is a selected committee of the board that deals with that, then comes and report to the board on the issue. Chair, I'm not sure if I left something.
I think it covers the just a mark. You know, I have learned from addressing parliamentary committees that they take every little word you say and keep it on the record. Next time when you come, we'll say, but on that day, this is what you said. Now, Mark, you said nobody who's alleged to be corrupt is still in the employ of Transnet. They are, because some of them are still just on suspension.
Yeah.
And that's a case that happened.
No,
you're quite right. Okay. So then that'd be the case.
Just Chair, I forgot. You reminded me about the charge sheets. Just an update, there are charge sheets already being drafted, sitting NPA to validate them so that election can happen.
Thank you very much. Mark,
there was one question on how to regularize the irregular expenditure. So the 8 billion from the prior year, we have made the process that one follows is you have to make an application to National Treasury, and if National Treasury decline that, then the accounting authority, which is the board, we take that to the board and say we've applied for condonement, it wasn't approved, and then the board can remove it from the register, can agree to remove it from the register, because it's not a number that should just go and go forever. Once it's reported, it's reported. So the 8 billion from prior has been fully applied for through National Treasury. We haven't got the responses yet, but I think with this whole engagement that's currently underway with the Auditor General and National Treasury and DPE, we are working on this better solution to get rid of that time history.
The reason why we're emphasizing it, part of the Auditor General's report, the irregular expenditure on SOE was very high. So all the SOEs that comes here, we need to be engaging them in terms of how do we reduce that irregular expenditure.
Honorable Chair, we were asked to indicate how many cases have been completed, how many are pending. I'm not sure, Mark, and
if you don't have details,
if you
can bring them.
Yeah, but we have some of them in the presentation that we have done. We can send the details. There are very few. The board concerns itself with the people in senior position, executives, and so on. At the moment, we have those appearing, being the two former acting chief executives of Transnet Port Authorities. One of them, of course, had also been the acting chief operating officer, and the chief executive of Transnet Pipelines, which is underway now. There is one where action has not yet happened. It relates to Transnet port terminals. I think investigations are continuing in that regard. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just in brief, those are some of the cases.
Yeah. The other details you can bring. Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine. Do we have somebody?
We are fine. Okay. No. Thank you very much. We really want to appreciate the time, the chairperson of the board, that you came and do the presentation. Our task is that we need to monitor all these SOEs, and we are happy that you are one of the SOEs that will reduce our stress because of the financial stability, and we want you to keep that good work as the board. We see there are a lot of challenges in relation to the previous contracts and everything. If there are anything that you want us to assist from Parliament side, we are there as the select to can be able to assist. We want you to dispose of all these other challenges in terms of irregular expenditure, so that you are able to deal with matters that arise in that financial year. If those of the previous financial years are dealt with, it will be quite of assistance. And we really want to appreciate that you also made your presentation available for members to be able to interact with it on time, so that when you come, we engage with it. We will call you when there are issues that we want to do, and maybe sometimes next year we might come and do oversight visits to your entity, either informed or uninformed. oversight visit, yes. With.
Now, there is one question that was not answered. That says measures you have undertaken to reduce cash flow and rate of rate.
Oh, yeah.
I'm bad.
Well, there was also another question that Mark must deal with, and that was the one that said, you say you believe that you support Transnet is financially sustainable, but you also say that in 2021 you'll come here and ask for funding. So you got to be, I know you didn't say that, but it was a question that was raised, so we need to respond to it. Or have you?
Let me help you here, Mark. Transnet, every single day of the week, including Saturday and Sunday, collects in excess of 200 million rand every day. Every day we have 200 million rand coming into the bank, into our bank account. So we're watching that money, and that's why we're confident that we are unlikely to be back here.
Richard, can we deal with roads to rail now?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, who remembers that. Let me start by saying this, and thank you for the opportunity, that the mere fact that Transnet is a state-owned entity, and I also come from KZN, by the way.
Wow.
So, Chair, Honorable Chair, what I want to say is that, you know, you asked for happy stories in the beginning. We talk about the road to rail migration. The mere fact that we are a state-owned entity doesn't mean to say that we are naturally handicapped. You know, we talked about our financial results, but on the production side, or on the security of supply, which is one of our mandates, let me put it that way, we also have had a great deal of accomplishments throughout the many, many years. And the recent one is the 375 wagon train, the longest production train in the world that we've just launched for manganese, one of our best exports. It's won the commodity of the year. In South Africa, manganese, and we ramped up over the last 5 years from 5 million tons
to 15 million tons.
So you can see that, you know, there's also a great deal of deep-seated competency and capability in Transnet that really never gets mentioned in the press. And that train that was moved is actually the wagons that were built by Transnet Engineering, all of those wagons, 30-ton per axle wagons. It's one of the longest trains in the world,
yeah.
And it's now a showcase of what, you know, the railways in South Africa can do and produce. So we're very proud of that accomplishment. So in terms of the migration of road to rail, you know, that has been perhaps one of our most challenging issues. There's rail-friendly commodities, which is our bulk, which is the coal and the iron ore and the manganese, chrome, ferrochrome, steel and cement. One of our most densely populated lines is the Gauteng to Durban NATCO line, which we are working on. There's been a number of problems that we have there, especially in terms of cancellations, which with issues around security that we are now getting a handle on, and also optimizing the line. We've had a number of issues insofar as maintenance of the track, maintenance of our equipment, and entire decongestion of the port, etc., etc. So that contributes largely to. But more interestingly, and I think this falls directly in line with Gert here, we are looking at intermodalism. How do we make sure that we've got hubs and spokes to have a more efficient way of putting throughput? So we've launched Tambo Springs. We're now working on the Cato Ridge hub to, you know, make sure that we get more of our containers and car carrier wagons that are on the road onto rail. So there's a project that's on the go at the moment, and we are fast-tracking that. But we have to get the underlying fundamentals right first, which is what we are working on, replacing that rail, to make sure that our new locomotives run on rail that is, you know, that can secure our customers' products and commodities. So we have a plan. It's not going as fast as we can with all the problems that we've been talking about, but we visualize the problems, and now we are going about solving it, you know, and we will come back and give you progress on that. Thank you very much for that, Chair.
Thank you very much, and like I said, the reason why we follow up, you will know that in the last report by the Auditor General, there is no SOE that got a clean audit, and you can be one that start. let's go and work very hard and ensure that indeed our people are safe. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes, you are a lady. We'll remember.